Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fode, and this Best of Authors on Tour podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
About the book, Orange Mint and Honey. It is a story about a young woman who's 25, and she's kind of having a hard time. She was raised by a woman who was an alcoholic, and her name is Shay, and soon as Shay was old enough, 18 and legal, she got up and out and left. And while she's been gone, her mother got sober and is sort of having her second act. She's got another little girl who's 3. She's got a beautiful garden. And she's in AA, and she's really gotten her act together. And because Shay is kind of on hard time, she's forced to come back home, which means they have to deal with their stuff from the past. So that's what the story is about. And it's set here in Denver. So there's places from Denver in the book, like the Tattered Cover. And where's Marilyn McGinnity? The Mercury Cafe is in the book, one of our favorite places. Blackberry's Coffee and Ice Cream, City Park. There's a few places that I go to, so that's in the book. So, I'm going to read from the first two chapters, sort of an abbreviated version of the first two chapters, just to give you a feel for how the book starts and what's it about. The first chapter is called, What Would Nina Simone Do? And Nina Simone kind of plays Shay's fairy godmother, only sassier and with more soul than Glinda the Good Witch. She's a little more Nina Simone-ish. So, anyway, the first chapter. I should have known things were getting bad when Nina Simone showed up. Don't get me wrong, I love Nina. I've been listening to her since History of Jazz sophomore year. The professor taught us to worship the great men of jazz, but it was the women who drew me in. Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Dinah Washington, Bessie Smith. They were queens, priestesses, goddesses, encouraging me, pointing me away from danger, schooling me in the ways of life, especially Nina Simone. I listened to Nina 1,000 times, and I always got something from her music. But the night she came to me for the first time, she must have known I needed more than a song could offer. I knew a famous singer, and a dead one at that, shouldn't have been in my bedroom. But somehow I wasn't surprised to see her, because I had been wishing she were there, wishing she would tell me what to do. Usually when I was down, I could keep going, but this time I bumped up against something that I couldn't get over. A wall as hard and cold and impossible to see through as frosted glass. I had lost my job writing grant proposals, something I have done, for an indigent care clinic, stopped going to class, something I have done, and received an eviction notice from my landlord, something I've never done. But still, all I could do was listen to music, hanging on to the life preserver of Nina Simone's eerie, regal voice. That night I was listening to the fast version of House of the Rising Sun. It's a live recording, 7 minutes long. Nina gets so into it, you can't make out what she's singing. Behind her, the band chants, rising sun, over and over, and the audience claps to the fast beat. The piano, the clapping hands, and the tambourine sound like church and juke joints, like sweat and heat, free and alive. I started dancing. I hadn't had the energy to get out of my pajamas for a week, but House of the Rising Sun had me shaking my head back and forth, twirling in circles, and pumping my arms and legs up and down like I was performing a tribal ritual, like I was one of Alvin Ailey's dancers. I danced through the song 3 times until all thoughts of jobs and grad school and unpaid bills were erased from my mind and I could sleep. At 3:33 a.m., I opened my eyes, and Nina Simone was there as if I had conjured her. standing in front of my bedroom window, blue moonlight spotlighting her features, thick lips, proud nose, slanted eyes rimmed in coal like Cleopatra's. I had been asking myself for days, what would Nina Simone do? And now she had come to tell me. I didn't know if she was a ghost or a hallucination, and I didn't care. Eyes wide, heart thumping like the speakers in the car of a teenage boy, I sat up and I waited for Nina Simone to say something wise, to tell me how to fix the mess I'd made of my life, to comfort me and convince me that I had everything I needed to move forward already inside me. "You've really screwed up now," she said. "What? You heard me." That's how low I had sunk. Even the spirits of the dead or my own daydreams were turning on me. "I thought you were going to offer me some advice. You're a grown woman. Why should I tell you what to do?" It sounded bad when she said it, but I was tired. Tired of always having to figure things out. Tired of always having to do everything myself. I'd been taking care of myself since I was 8 years old, so for someone else to tell me what to do was exactly what I wanted. For once in my life, I wanted someone else to carry the load. "Because I need help," I shouted. And they were words I had never said before. But then again, Nina Simone had never been in my apartment before. It was a night of firsts. "You got that right," she said, taking in the mounds of dirty clothes, used Kleenexes, heaps of junk mail, textbooks, CDs, milk-crusted cereal bowls and teacups. "What I need is just a break, a rest, a time out." "Go home," Nina Simone said. She knew my name. "Go home, Shay," Nina Simone said. "You need to go home." She must have read my mind, which shouldn't have been too hard considering there was a good chance she was being generated from the same place. The last time I saw Nona, who's Shay's mother, I was in my junior year in college. She came to Iowa City when she reached the step where they make you apologize. She was very pregnant, and I couldn't believe how ugly she was. Her face was all broken out, and she must have gained 50, 60 pounds, not just in her breasts and stomach, but in her face, arms, hands, back, butt, thighs. The bags under her eyes were puffed up like pot stickers. Even her feet were fat. When I saw how heavy and zitty she was, I was almost happy she had come. I kept my eyes on her bloated feet the whole time she read her apology. Her voice shook. I don't remember exactly what she said, something about being sorry she let me down, sorry I learned I couldn't trust her. But I remember her saying something about us being mother and daughter again. And even though I was looking down at her feet, I saw her rest her hand on her stomach when she said the word mother. That was too much, acting like her pregnancy was a good thing, not a horrible, stupid mistake. I had actually been hopeful when she told me she was going to AA. For the first few months, I thought, wow, she's really going to do it this time. Stupid me, I actually let myself believe her. Then she got pregnant, knocked up by a guy she met in AA, who promptly left her high and dry, just like my own father had. And there she was expecting me to believe that things were different. She couldn't even do AA without going off with some guy. She was 36 years old, and she had never heard of birth control, never heard of AIDS or chlamydia or herpes. She told me she hoped I would give her another chance. I think she wanted me to shout, "I forgive you," and throw myself into her arms, but I just stared at her feet, at the flesh rising like bread dough over the straps of her red sandals. Nina Simone gingerly towed a pair of jeans out of her way, revealing the panties I had worn with them 3 weeks ago tangled up inside, and she walked toward me. I hoped she wouldn't get too close. It had been a while since I had seen soap and water. I was cloaked in a cloud of funk toxic enough to re-kill a dead woman. She sat on the foot of my bed. "You could rest. Let your mother take care of you." I snorted. That's not how it worked. I took care of Nona and I'm done. Maybe it would be different. Maybe you've got nothing to lose. I doubted it would be very different, but she was right about me having nothing to lose. Spending the next few months in my old VW bug didn't sound very appealing, but still I hesitated. "Go home," Nina Simone urged, her long earrings swinging like chandeliers. So I picked up the phone and I called Nona for the first time in 7 years. Chapter 2 is called Strands. A week later, on the eighth night of the eighth month of the year, I arrived at the address Nona had given me, still questioning the visitation, fantasy, fever dream that had made me think coming back to Denver could ever be a good idea. The sun had just disappeared behind the mountains far to the west. It's 800 miles from Iowa City, and I had been driving in my unair-conditioned 1972 Volkswagen all day. I was exhausted, dirty, and sticky with sweat, but not at all ready to go in. A cool Colorado night breeze, so unlike the fog that passes for air in Iowa, flowed through the windows, and Nina Simone's voice floated out of the car speakers. Just as she was singing, "A gal who's been forgotten may forgive, but never once forget," two figures, one big and one small, walked toward me out of the darkness into the light of the street lamp. I turned the key to stop the cassette tape, but I could still hear Nina's voice telling me to go on and do what you came to do. I got out of the car. A woman who I had to assume was Nona, though I barely recognized her, opened the gate and walked right up to me and hugged me as if there had never been hundreds of miles and years of bitterness between us. She pulled away from me smiling, teary-eyed. "I'm so happy you're here." I gaped at her, my eyes dry. At 40, she still looked more like my sister than my mother, especially now that the baby weight was gone. But what was really strange, though, was that she had on glasses and she had her hair cut into a very short afro. Long straight hair used to be her thing. She always wore weaves and extensions that floated around her shoulders like feathers. And no matter how much she was drinking, she made it to the beauty shop every 6 weeks to get her relaxer retouched. She was probably always the best-looking drunk in the bar. She rubbed her hand over her tight curls and said, "I look different, huh?" I don't know why, but I answered, "No." Maybe it was because I didn't really want to talk about looks. I was wearing old cutoffs, a t-shirt stained with truck stop burrito sauce, and to complete my ensemble, my bandana. I had started pulling my hair again, something I hadn't done since the ninth grade, and I had cleared 3 bald patches around my head. The scarf was to cover the carnage. A little girl in ballet flats and a pink tutu and a Colorado State University sweatshirt, I used to work there, hugged Nona's leg. "Hey, this is Sunshine," Nona said, and she picked up the little girl and beamed at her like she was the cinnamon on her cappuccino. I'd seen her before, but only in pictures, and she could have been anybody's baby, sitting in a bathtub with soap bubbles on her head or smiling like a Buddha in the middle of a patch of flowers. She could have been one of those child models they display in picture frames for sale at Target. But right here in front of me, in Nona's arms, looking like Nona, looking like me, with the same thick eyebrows, bags under her eyes, and a chin like the sharp tip of a heart, there was no getting around it. She was Nona's daughter. She was my sister. "Sunny, this is your big sister. Say hi." Sunny mumbled hi. "Hi," I responded, as if to ask, "do you know how it came to be that I have a little sister and Nona has cut off all her hair and I'm back in Denver?" Not surprisingly, Sunny didn't have any answers. "Come on in," Nona said. I got my things out of the car and followed them through the gate and up a path of small river rocks to the house. We got inside. Nona said, "Come on, sit down." She brought back a serving tray with green apples, cheese, crackers, sugar cookies, and 2 glasses of iced tea. She handed me a glass of tea with a slice of orange in it. I made it with orange mint from my yard. The cookies, too. My sponsor calls me the chocolate Martha Stewart. I made a half-hearted laugh at her joke. "What?" she smiled. She was serious. Nona, who used to think she was really doing something when she chopped up some hot dogs on top of a pot of pork and beans, thought she was like Martha Stewart? All right, clearly I had lost my mind. Somehow smoked some crack I didn't know about. But now I could see that letting a dead singer's ghost or a figment of my imagination talk me into moving in with Nona, even temporarily, was a mistake of epic proportion. Nina Simone had put a spell on me, and I needed to sleep it off. Then I'd be able to think better, figure out where to go from here. I put down my glass. I just want to go to bed. "Okay, let's show you to your room," Nona said. At first, all I saw was yellow, as if all the butter, lemons, canaries, rubber ducks, and Easter bonnets in the world, as well as the sun itself, had been collected into one room to please a little girl. Yellow walls, yellow comforter, yellow rug, and yellow curtains. Nona pointed to a vase of flowers on the nightstand. The daisies are to bring you joy, the lavender will help you sleep, and the roses are because, well, who doesn't like roses? You sure you don't want anything to eat or something to drink? I just wanted to go to bed. That's okay, I said. Well, we'll be right next door if you need anything. Your towels are in the bathroom, the pink ones. Help yourself to anything. Lord, listen to me. She put Sunny down, took a deep breath, and put her hands on her shoulders. I couldn't tell if she meant to brace me or herself. She looked at me, her eyes so clear and bright behind her lenses. Lachey, you're home. You know I hate it when you call me that. It's just Shay. I'm sorry, I forgot. But anyway, you're home. Home. So just act like it, okay? Claim it. She looked like she wanted to say more, but luckily she made herself stop because I was stunned enough by what I had already heard. Claim it? After they left, I closed the door and sat on the bed. As grimy as I was too tired to shower and brush my teeth. I turned off the light, and a glow-in-the-dark constellation of stars and moons appeared on the ceiling. I kicked off my shoes, pushed the toys off the bed, and lay down. I got my iPod out of my backpack, took the bandana off my head, and put in my earphones. In the darkness, I touched my hair. The inches of new growth near the scalp were soft and fuzzy, and the straightened hair beyond the new growth was dry and rough. My hand traveled to an egg-shaped bald spot above my right ear. One of these days, I was really going to have to stop doing this, but today wasn't it. I separated out one strand of hair and pulled it gently until it lengthened and flattened and all the curl in the new part was gone. Then I slowly wrapped it around my index finger and yanked hard. In my hand, the nappy part of the freed hair curled back up, twisting around until it was back as nature wanted it. I separated out another strand and did the same thing. I pulled three more hairs, and one by one, my muscles unclenched, the spaces between my bones opened, and my blood flowed more freely. I felt my lungs expand. I closed my eyes and went to sleep with Nina Simone in my ear and five black strands of hair in my hand. That's the end.
That's all for this Best of Authors on Tour podcast. I'm Darren Fode, and this podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.